Hello, everyone. Hello and a warm welcome to this event. It's titled The French Presidential Election of 2022, What They Mean for France and for Europe. And it's hosted by the LSE's European Institute. I'm Professor Chris Anderson. I'm a professor in European politics and policy here in the European Institute. And I'm delighted to be chairing this event tonight. I'm delighted to welcome our speakers. But before I do so, I have a couple of housekeeping announcements. First of all, for those of you who like to use Twitter and tweet about various things that are happening in the world and around you, the hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE French Elections. So once again, LSE French Elections, one word. The event is being recorded and will hopefully be made available as a podcast, subject to no technical difficulties. Our event will consist of presentations from our speakers, followed by some discussion with me and then a Q&A with the audience. When we come to the Q&A portion of the event, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom of your screen. Questions will be submitted to myself, and I will then pose as many of those as I can in the time that we have. Please do let us know your name and affiliation when you pose your questions. Okay, right, so let's get to our speakers. I'll introduce them in the order of speaking. First of all, we have Dr. Marta Lorimer, who's one of us, one of ours, so to speak. She's an LSE fellow in European politics. Prior to joining the European Institute, she was a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Exeter in the UK, but she's also held visiting positions at Forum Medem at the TU Dresden and at the Centre d'études européennes at Sciences Po in Paris. After Dr. Lorimer, we will have Professor Rainbow Murray, who's a professor of politics at Queen Mary University here in London and a co-convener of the Political Studies Association's French Politics Group. She's been fascinated with French politics, she says, for more than two decades and has published widely in the area, as well as editing special issues of French politics on the 2007 elections and in parliamentary affairs on the 2012 elections. She provides regular commentary on French politics for various outlets, including The Economist Intelligence Unit. She's also an expert on gender diversity and representation with particular interests in the role of gender in elections, parliaments, and national executives. Her current projects include a book about gendered representation in the French parliament. We're really happy that she's here. And then finally, we have with us Christine Roquent, who's a journalist and a former chief operating officer of France 24 and RFI. So she's had a glittering professional career. She was also the editor-in-chief of the weekly news magazine L'Express, and she produces and anchors a weekly radio program on foreign affairs called Affaires étrangères, of course, as it would be, on France Culture Public Radio. She's a regular contributor to the BBC and other TV and radio networks. She writes regularly on French, European, and international issues for various European publications. Right, now that I have introduced to you this amazing set of speakers we have with us tonight, let's get right to it. And we're going to turn it over to Marta for her presentation. Marta, you're up.
Great. Thank you very much, Chris, for the introduction. So I work primarily on the national rally. So as someone who really works on Marine Le Pen's party, I thought that I would focus these remarks on what is going on the far right on this election, because it is really a quite interesting place to look at. So if you've been following the presidential campaign, you will probably know at this point that this year there's not one, but two radical right candidates. So on the one side, you have Marine Le Pen, the leader of the National Rally. And on the other, there is Éric Zemmour, a journalist turned political leader of the movement Reconquest. Both Le Pen and Zemmour are well known to the French public and to observers of French politics. So Marine Le Pen has been head of the National Rally for just over 10 years. And she's now on her third presidential campaign and is widely expected to be in the runoff with Macron. So just to give you an idea, based on Politico's poll aggregator data, she's currently polling at around 19%. And this is around 10 percent points behind Macron, but also a good five ahead of the radical left leader, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is her closest competitor at the moment for the second spot in the runoff. So this would be actually Le Pen's second time in the runoff after she lost to Macron in 2017 by a pretty wide margin. Now, Zemmour is less experienced with politics and is running for the first time. And until recently, he was really known as a journalist and writer known for his provocative views on Islam, immigration, and women. And he was prosecuted several times for racial abuse and incitement to hatred, and was convicted twice for incitement to hatred. So he basically suggested for months that he wasn't really sure if he was going to be running or not. But in November 2021, he actually officially declared he'd be running for president. And I think there are a few interesting things about this contestation, this competition on the far right, and perhaps what it can tell us about the National Rally and the future of the French far right after this election, which I think is going to be something quite interesting to look at. So the first thing is that although it was widely regarded at first as an issue for Le Pen, the arrival of Zemmour has actually proven to be a blessing in disguise for her in this election. Now, this might seem completely counterintuitive because after all, these two are fighting for the same electorate. So having two candidates might simply split the vote and lead to neither of them making it into the second round. And this was actually a concern early on, at least for her party especially. And then Le Pen also lost some of her party leaders and supporters to Zemmour, including her very own niece, Marion Maréchal, who recently joined Zemmour's campaign. This being said, Le Pen has actually benefited from having a more extreme competitor because he's really facilitated her task of appearing moderate. So for at least 10 years or so, Le Pen has been on a mission to de-demonize the National Rally and make it appear as a more presentable party. She hasn't really changed the party's program substantively, but she has toned down some of the more extreme rhetoric that characterized the party in her father's time. And the appearance of someone like Zemmour, who by and large uses the language of the old National Rally, kind of made it possible for her to appear moderate by comparison and advance this idea that she is not the extremist that she is said to be. So in the sense, Zemmour may have helped Le Pen mainstream even further with potentially good electoral returns. The second interesting dynamic is, I think that Le Pen's decision to concentrate this election on economic issues seems to be paying off in this duel. If you're familiar with the National Rally, you will know that it's really mostly known for its positions on issues such as immigration and identity. But since taking over the party, Le Pen has really made it a priority to develop further the party's economic agenda. And in this election specifically, she decided pretty early on to make purchasing power a core theme of her campaign and really insist on economic issues. This was a smart move after COVID, and it proved to be also an extremely lucky one in light of the war in Ukraine, because Marine Le Pen's mostly working class electorate has been hard hit by COVID and by the economic implications on sanctions of Russia, which has made this focus on increasing purchasing power and really economic concerns of working class people really, really appealing. So if you compare this with Zemmour, he has, on the other hand, really continued to insist on immigration only. And following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, he has steadily lost ground in the polls. Not only because of his previous support for Putin, something which he shares with Le Pen, so not a big difference there, but also because he was unable to respond to the economic concerns that were raised by the conflict. Finally, however, in spite of the fact that things might be looking good for Le Pen, or at least better than they were just a few months ago, I still think this election raises some interesting issues for her. So in the short term, she's still unlikely to beat Macron in a runoff. And she also has to hope that enough of her voters turn up to vote so she can actually make it into the runoff. And this is not actually a given since her electorate is defined by very high abstention rates. And here being eliminated in the first round would be a very hard blow. And even losing in second, especially if she lost by a large margin, I think could really put Le Pen's leadership in question. And I think it's in this scenario that it's going to be that Zemmour's emergence really indicates potential trouble ahead for the party, because in the long term, the rise of Zemmour indicates that there are some cracks appearing in the National Rally's dominance of the French radical right space. So in fact, this is not the first time that there is more than one radical right candidate competing in the French presidential, but it is the first time that a radical right candidate not belonging to the National Rally appears as a somewhat serious contender. So I think it will be interesting to see what happens both in the legislative elections and in the next few years, when I think we'll see if Zemmour is this one-time presidential candidate, or if he or someone else can actually mount a more sustained campaign to become the leading unity candidate of the French radical right, and potentially, and this is probably the bigger worry, of the French right in general. So I think I'll stop there, but I really look forward to your questions.
Thanks, Marta. That was great. That was really interesting. Got us off on a really interesting, in a really interesting direction. And I'm going to turn it over to Rainbow now, who will take the floor for a few minutes.
Thank you so much. I just want to apologize. I'm in the final throes of COVID, so I'm a little bit hoarse, but just bear with me. So today I want to talk a little bit about the French party system and how it has realigned under Macron. And one of the surprises of this election, I think, is how it has failed to return to business as normal after the surprise election in 2017. So allow me to clarify that a little bit. So business as normal in France is centripetal competition, where the main parties of the left compete with the main party or parties of the right, normally contesting over the center ground. And that has been the way that French politics has organized, with a few minor differences from one election to the next. But that's been the fundamental principle of French politics since the founding of the Fifth Republic. And we started to see a few changes along the way from the 1980s onwards. We saw the rise of the far right, and we saw a growing plurality of parties on the left, including environmental movements. But the fundamental left-right duality has remained true. There was an upset in 2002 when the mainstream left candidate failed to qualify for the second round, and instead the place was taken by Jean-Marie Le Pen, father of Marine, the far-right candidate. That was more about a split vote in the first round, complacency, than it was about a collapse of the left, and it was seen as very much an exception and a real upset. And we went back to forward business as usual after that until 2017, when everything changed. And the left had been in a position of almost complete power in 2012. They held power at all the different levels of French politics, to the point where the right said it was an unfair monopoly. And in a five-year presidency, François Hollande managed to completely burn the party's popularity and influence to the point where they just collapsed in 2017 and haven't recovered. And their candidate is now polling around 2%, which for a party that was, until the previous election, one of the two main contenders for government, is an absolutely shocking collapse. And they have instead seen the main candidate emerging on the left in the form of Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is a hard left populist candidate way out from the center. And the left have tried to sort it out for this election. There's a plurality of candidates. There are nearly half a dozen sprouting up on the left. And none of them could rally the others around them. So there was the organization by desperate left-wing voters of a people's primary, where they tried to impose a primary on the candidates and say, listen, this is who the people want to represent the left. Can you all please align behind them? But it was a disaster, because the main contenders refused to take part in the primary because they didn't want to have to queue up behind anybody else. The person who did win the primary couldn't get enough support from locally elected politicians to meet the threshold for actually contesting the election and was forced to drop out. And in the end, the People's Primary gave up and threw their weight behind Mélenchon, who was, I think, third placed in the primary and certainly nowhere near winning it. So the constant division on the left has left them in a very weak and divided place. Meanwhile, going back to 2017, the right also fell apart. They had a disastrous candidate in François Fillon, who got embroiled in a massive scandal that caused his party to fail. And this led to the emergence of Emmanuel Macron in the centre. And this led to a new dynamic in France of a sort of a centrifugal politics where you had a centrist candidate flanked by opposition on the far left and on the far right, with the collapse of the main left and right parties. And so you now had three poles of competition: centre, far left, far right. And that was only ever expected to be a temporary phenomenon. And what has been really striking in the time since then is the failure of the party system to realign and get back to its normal position. And for the parties of the left, you can blame it on ongoing division internally. It's pretty much their own fault. For the parties on the right, it's a bit more of a complex situation. I think we have to give some credit here to Emmanuel Macron. I think he's a more gifted politician than he's often given credit for. He's been very skillful in the way that he has very carefully stolen from Les Républicains, the main party of the right. He has stolen their personnel. He's taken the moderate flank of the party and pulled it into his own party. He's appointed his prime ministers from the defectors from Les Républicains. He has stolen their policies to the point where he's now considered more of a centre-right politician than a centre politician. But he's done that deliberately, knowing that he could largely ignore the left because they were too busy falling on their own sword for him to have to do much. Whereas he always saw the threat as coming from the right, and so he's picked their pockets continuously. And this has left them in a very vulnerable situation. They've lost their moderate flank, and they've also lost a chunk of their most right-leaning flank who've gone over to the far right. And that also speaks to Marine Le Pen's detoxification strategy and her gradual move towards more mainstream politics. I wouldn't call her a candidate of the moderate right. She's definitely still a candidate of the far right, but she has vacated enough of the most toxic space on the far right to allow Zemmour to come through and take over that space. And we can see, I think, his candidacy is a reflection of the detoxification strategy that Marine Le Pen has pursued. But the consequence of that is that the mainstream right are now really tightly squeezed between a greedy centre-right party that has been gobbling up everything in their sort of most electable space, and an encroaching far-right party that is also stealing their turf. And so we now find ourselves in an almost astonishing situation where none of the three front-running candidates is from the mainstream left or right. We have, again, this centrifugal situation of a centrist candidate in Macron, flanked by Mélenchon and Le Pen. So the question remains now where we're going to be in 2027. The most striking thing about Macron's party is that it is his party, it's his movement. It was formed around him and in his name. And it remains to be seen whether in the next 5 years he can build a more lasting political party out of what he's created, or whether it is ultimately his own vanity project that will disappear with him, assuming that he wins this election and then is obliged to stand down in 2027, having served two terms. And so that will be the point where we see whether there is a return to the business as usual of French politics, or whether the Macron decade has managed to reform the French political landscape forever. And that's where I'll stop.
Thank you so much, Rainbow. And I'm sorry to hear you haven't been well. And I'm even more appreciative that you made time to be with us today. So thank you so much for that. And I'll turn it over to Christine, who will pull it all together and tell us how it all makes sense. No, I'm kidding. That's too much pressure. Over to you, Christine. You're on mute right now.
Yes. So again, thank you, Chris, and thank you for the invitation. Let me confess, it's been very difficult to be really fascinated with this presidential campaign. So I'll try and limit my remarks to three main points, as indeed both Marta and Rainbow have perfectly well described the basics of this contest. My first point has to do with the Putin effect. the Putin effect, of course, has been that the news cycle has completely been dominated by Ukraine, and it's been very difficult for the media to organize any debate, because even the candidates didn't really want to bother. So it's been painful. And there's a debate, I think, tonight or tomorrow, and frankly, I don't intend to watch. I shouldn't say that publicly, but it's true that it hasn't been very exciting in that respect. The Putin effect on the candidates, that's been very interesting. As indeed, there's a degree of irony in French politics. The one candidate who has come out as a surprise, a good surprise, and the most obviously anti-Putin is the communist candidate, Fabien Roussel, who is the leader of the French Communist Party. As you know, the French Communist Party used to be over-dominant some 50 years ago. Now it's been moribund, but this guy has come out and he's, you know, he loves red meat. He loves hunting. He says that you know, Putin is really a bastard, and that he's not embarrassed by the history of the French Communist Party. So that's been the surprise. But the Putin effect has been very harmful to Mélenchon, the far left, who was praising Putin until really the day before yesterday, and obviously to Zemmour, who would really celebrate Putin as the one and only who would fight against, you know, such boring political correctness, as he puts it. And of course, Marine Le Pen, who in the previous presidential election, 2017, got money from a Russian bank, which her party had some problem, in fact, paying back. And there was some sort of a judicial episode there, but she's been very clever. Actually, she's been performing, as indeed Marta described. She's been a good performer in this campaign, and Zemmour has indeed helped her, you know, to make her a more round figure. And her appeal, her populist appeal to the lower middle class, the working class, is real. And so there's a sociological impact there that's interesting. The traditional conservative candidate, Valérie Pécresse, has been a very poor performer. And she also spent time, you know, saying, oh, but look at these other two and, you know, how pro-Putin they are. So she really got drowned in a sort of internal quarrel from this, moving really from the center right to the far right, and even using some of the same vocabulary, which hasn't helped her, in fact. The Green candidate, in spite of the environment, which is supposed to be, you know, such a common concern to all of us, hasn't done very well either. So am I forgetting anyone? The Putin effect also has influence on Macron, because Macron not only has played his role as, you know, the French president to France, very eager to maintain her role as a grande nation, seat at the UN Security Council, for whatever that's worth. And of course, being the president of the EU Council until the end of June. And so this very afternoon, he spoke again to Vladimir Putin, alas to no effect, as Macron was trying to organize some sort of humanitarian operation in Mariupol, and Putin said no. But it has played well for Macron, except on one aspect, which has to do with, of course, the economic and social impact of the Ukrainian crisis. And that means the cost of living, the cost of oil and gas. And that, of course, has compelled him for the past 2 days to eventually get into real campaigning on those very issues of cost of living and that's it. My second point has to do with a political system, which Rainbow perfectly described, but I would insist on the erosion of the system, because the problem really has to do with those people who consider that this system does not answer their needs and priorities, whatever they are. The whole axis of French society has moved to the right considerably, which of course explains the virtual death of the French Socialist Party, and indeed the fact that you now have the traditional conservative candidate being eaten up by the two far right candidates. So you see the whole axis moving to the right. And Macron, of course, who knows all the polls and the analysis and everything else, moving along with that evolution, and yet having to face the discontent of a large fraction of the population. Remember the Gilets Jaunes, all those people who feel that whoever is in power, those elitist people in Paris will always despise them, neglect them, and that's a very deep fracture, I'm afraid, in our society. My last point has to do with the polls, and what really worries most experts, and particularly Macron and Le Pen, who are likely to be the two contenders for the second round, is the turnout, because that has been, you know, in a country where voting is not compulsory, a low turnout would obviously hinder not the legitimacy, but indeed the credibility of whoever gets elected. The latest polls I was looking at right now, Macron has gone down a bit, Le Pen has gone up, together with Mélenchon, but Mélenchon is third. And what most people will watch on the 10th of April is the turnout. And not to forget that we have parliamentary elections in June, which will actually determine the real margin of maneuver that Macron will have if indeed he is re-elected on April 24th. And I stop here.
Thank you very much, Christine. It sounds to me like we've hit a lot of the really important notes already. And thanks to all of you for the thoughts on those. Maybe if I can take the privilege of the chair and ask a couple of questions to maybe address some of those themes that run through the comments that you've made. There's sort of the low politics of the horse race, which is so much fun and everyone likes to look at. And I am somebody who studies elections, so I always enjoy that part of an election campaign. Now, Christina said it's been a boring election. And as I was trying to read French newspapers today, Figaro, Le Monde, and everything else in between, I was trying to find news about the election. And that it was really hard to do. Honestly, you had to go search for Macron in the keywords to find anything. There was a story in the Figaro, they had a report card whether Macron has kept his promises. And they had this sort of typical thing that newspapers like to do before the election. He promised this, what has he done? He promised this, what has he done? It was hidden somewhere away from the front page of the paper. And I sort of imagine that not too many people clicked on that story. Given what has been going on in the world. So is it really an election, or is it a bit of a coronation that we're seeing here? Because we're really just talking about second place, right? The politics of the horse race of the election seems to be about second place. Lance Armstrong, of course, the notorious cheat and multiple Tour de France winner, used to call the person who comes in second the first loser. That's how highly competitive he was and is. So who will be the first loser? It seems like Marta said it's going to be Le Pen. Does the panel agree? And what does that mean? Who wants to take that one? Rainbow and Christine?
Thank you, I'll have a go. I think the most likely outcome, based on consistent polling data and how the selection is playing out, is that we will see Macron and Le Pen qualify to the second round, where I think Macron will beat Le Pen. I think he'll beat her by a smaller margin than he did at the previous election, and I think that that shows a consistent upward trend of her party under her leadership. I say consistent, you know, there have been little fluctuations, but the long-term trend has been to become more and more mainstream, to become more and more acceptable. I mentioned in my talk that the placing second of her father in 2002 was referred to as an earthquake at the time. It was an enormous political upset. And one of her achievements, I think, is to make her presence in the second round banal, that it's no longer seen. Not only is it not seen as an upset, it's not even seen as a surprise or as something problematic. In fact, one of the most interesting things about this election for me was that we saw the previous main centrist candidate, François Bayrou, whose presence in politics got superseded by Emmanuel Macron. We saw him throwing his weight behind Marine Le Pen in the run up to the declaration of candidates. There's a barrier that every candidate has to overcome, a threshold. They have to get the support of 500 locally elected politicians. And this is more difficult to achieve for those from small parties who don't have significant elected presence at other levels of French politics. And Bayrou, who has traditionally taken a cordon sanitaire approach to the far right, said that he would encourage his supporters to give signatures to Marine Le Pen, in his words, to save democracy, on the grounds that any candidate who was getting 10% or more of the popular vote should be eligible to enter the race and should not be kept out by being unable to meet this threshold. But for someone in his position who has long stood against the far right to be actively encouraging her presence in the race says a lot, I think, about this transformation that we've witnessed. And so while this election might be relatively predictable in terms of its outcome, I still think it's important and significant in terms of how it shows the shifting sands of French politics and how it shows, above all, the normalization of more extreme views as part of the French political mainstream.
Thanks, Rainbow. Christine, do you agree? It will be Le Pen in the second round?
Yes, I think it's more than likely. And of course, what will be very interesting is the traditional TV debate between the two rounds. The date has just been announced. It will be on that Wednesday. So it should be the 20th, I guess. And her performance had been absolutely abysmal last time, because she could not master any fact or figure. It was embarrassing. And she's obviously done her homework to some extent. But for anyone who really looks at the issues that the French economy has to face in the coming years, her program is just nonsensical. And it's very French. You know, let's spend and spend and spend, and of course, you know, increase salaries and lower taxes, and you know, which is what really every politician on every political party in our democracy says. But still, the program itself, assuming voters will care to have a look at programs, is more. Complete than it was 5 years ago, but I guess that any serious economist would very much doubt her recipes. An interesting point, Europe, the European Union, has totally disappeared from the arguments. Even Zemmour And, you know, there's no talk anymore about Frexit and not even talk about getting out of the euro. And French public opinion attitude towards the EU has indeed improved. So it's interesting that that argument has really been left out. And of course, with COVID and Ukraine, the EU per se has showed to some extent its usefulness to French voters. One word about Macron's performance, because it's often said that the guy is too Jupiterian, which of course the French presidential system is all about, as it's, you know, supposed to be the encounter between a man, a woman eventually, but not this time around, in my view, a man and a nation. And of course, Macron is criticized for being too aloof and too arrogant and so on and so forth. But it may be so. But again, the system, I guess, encourages, if you look at the previous presidents, they were not really that, warm characters, except for Chirac, who didn't do much for his second term, but he did have that sort of human touch. But Macron's performance in economic terms, in spite of COVID or because of COVID, is quite good. And unemployment is low by French standards. So there's a point where voters who bother to look at programs and proposals might eventually take that into account for the dual Macron-Le Pen.
Interesting. So, Marta, so it sounds like from the previous comments that being first loser isn't so bad this time around. So Madame Le Pen might actually like to be first loser or second winner in order to help her own politics. She's only, I'm going to say this, being the middle-aged person that I am, she's only 54, I believe. So she still has many years to go. In any case, Marta, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's, I think there's two, it depends on how well she loses, basically, because if she, okay, it's gonna be hard for her to some extent to do worse than she did last time. I think Marine Le Pen has learned a lesson or two from her previous very, very failed debate. She was notoriously very busy during between the two rounds. And so much so that she was basically unable to prepare for that. She arrived, she was exhausted. And she underperformed heavily. So it's gonna be hard for her to do worse than she did then, but she also needs to lose by not too big a margin to be able to still say that maybe one day the national rally could actually win an election. Because this is the problem for Le Pen and for the extreme right, is that there's this idea that there's a glass ceiling and that they just cannot get over it. And that is where Le Pen needs to do reasonably well to be able to say, look, when my father was running, it was obvious that everyone would vote against him. With me, it's no longer the case. I'm starting to get votes from more moderate voters. And in this, I think what's going to be interesting to see is really what do the Républicains do? Do they say convincingly that we will, in the second round, we will vote for Macron? Or do they start splintering a little bit? There's already a few of them that have said that, you know, if there was a second round with Zemmour, they would vote for Zemmour. What would stop them from saying, you know, in the second round, I will vote for Le Pen because I'm convinced that she has changed. So I think it's really going to be down to how well she loses, because at this point, we also know that there is the possibility to actually break the stronghold off the national rally on the radical right. Now, just a few months ago, Zemmour and Le Pen were polling quite similarly. And I think Le Pen, to some extent, got lucky that her chosen strategy was to focus on economic issues, which became really, really relevant throughout the campaign. But the question really is there, what happens next? Do these parties, does this fairly sizable at this point, hard right / radical right group manage to unite and then perhaps really run with a unitary candidate of some kind, in which case they become a real political force to be reckoned with? Or do they kind of keep splintering to some extent? Or what happens there? Do they break up between some who go with Macron and others who sort of join Zemmour or Le Pen or whoever's there? So I think really looking at what happens to Les Républicains after this election is going to be fascinating. Just one small thing, I suppose, on whether this is a coronation for Macron. I think it's, again, it might be a coronation, but it still might be a contested one in at least two ways. If sort of if he doesn't get as convincing a win as he needs, it's going to be still a question like how could he not convincingly beat Le Pen? And the other thing is how many people show up, because this is already, if he's elected on a high abstention rate, that could potentially lead to some people saying, well, look, he didn't really get that many votes. He is the president of the, whatever, the 25%. Most people just didn't show up. And that is, it was already suggested it was going to be a problem with his first mandate. He still managed to do things, but it could still be the kind of thing that becomes an issue for him over the longer term if he starts to propose more radical reforms.
Well, I suppose if some of that will depend on thinking matter for, I suppose also on the parliamentary election in June and kind of how that plays out, what turnout will be, but also kind of what kind of a mandate he might be able to produce for his own party. I'm going to try to sort of step far away from the horse race and get into something that Christine mentioned. Since we're the European Institute here at the LSE, we care about things related to Europe. Christine mentioned that Europe has sort of disappeared from the radar of this election. And yet, obviously, Europeans are looking at France. We are looking at this election. We're looking at the performance of Macron in a variety of ways, not just in terms of what it means for him domestically, but also perhaps what it means for him as a leader within the European Union, on the Council, and what have you. So could I ask the panel what you think the impact of this election will be on Europe, so to speak? How will this reverberate into Europe, into other European nations, into European Union politics, and so on? Have you thought about those? No one wants to take it. Is that too hard a question or too easy?
No. I mean, it's too wide. Maybe. But let me give it a try.
Okay.
I think, like any election in our democracies, in our liberal democracies, it will be a test of the legitimacy of the very system, which gets us back to this idea of, you know, what is the turnout going to be? Are young people going to be motivated, or do they find that really that they can't bother and they're all on TikTok? So I think for all of us, it is indeed a test. Of course, the France has this unique system of a direct election for the top job. No other European country has a similar system. That being said, it will show that indeed what we would call in France the cordon sanitaire, the way the far right would be considered as really not to be really, you know, even considered. And the élan républicain really meant that you would not dare say that you would vote for such people. I think that far-right populism has been gaining ground in most of our European countries, except maybe in Britain, because you have another very peculiar electoral system. But we can see that in Italy, of course, but Marta knows best. We see that in Spain to some degree. In Germany, on the contrary, AfD has lost ground. But still, the fact that far-right populism is a sort of accepted dimension of our political spectrum is, I think, a phenomenon which the French presidential election will only confirm.
Marta and Rainbow, what do you think this means for Europe?
As someone who's written an entire PhD on the Front National's conception of Europe, I was extremely disappointed.
I thought you might like the question.
No, but I just feel like I was kind of equally, I was a bit disappointed in just how little space the latest program actually has on Europe. And what's interesting is that what is there, and mostly what Le Pen has been talking about in Europe, is she's kind of shifted to a Orban peace angle on this, where basically she's saying, you know, it's all about restoring the sovereignty of the nation, which she used to say before. But now she's really insisting on the fact that, you know, the European Union should have absolutely nothing to say on what a country decides to do, even if that means breaking the rule of law. So I think that's perhaps like the main evolution in terms of her discourse in Europe, that really she's focusing a lot more on this legal supremacy question. So even presuming, let's go into the scenario where Le Pen wins, what I think we'd be seeing is, we wouldn't be seeing a Brexit vote. We'd be seeing an Orban style or a law and justice style type of politics and contestation with the European Union. But that's the thing, the European Union has not come up as a campaign topic. It's very difficult to know what anyone thinks about it. Presumably, if Macron wins, it's good news because it's politics as usual. Everyone knows, like, he's a known quantity. He's known for kind of liking the EU. Although they said this 5 years ago, and it's not like Macron actually liking the European Union or being there has been such a huge game changer in terms of EU politics. So in that sense, I don't think we're going to see a major revolution in EU politics, whoever wins. It's just kind of going to be, is it politics as usual, or are we going to see more of the Central and Eastern European politics seeping into it? Hugely, sort of symbolically speaking, it's hugely different if it's France doing it or if it's Hungary or Poland. But still, I think those are probably the two dynamics we might see.
Interesting. Rainbow, have you thought about this?
I think one of the main deals with the EU right now is that everything has been reconfigured as a result of the invasion of Ukraine, that the importance of the European Union has increased manyfold because we now see a threat to the security of Europe on our doorstep. And so now there's a number of issues that Europe needs to deal with collectively. It needs to think about its defense and security policies. It needs to think about its energy security. It needs to think about its food security. It needs to deal with the cost of living crisis. We're still dealing with the fallout and the ongoing effects of the pandemic. And so I think even the candidates who are not fans of Europe maybe realize that this is not the best time to go out and attack it all guns blazing. This is a good time to be quiet about Europe, which I think is why it's not really on the agenda, because like it or loathe it, I think France needs the European Union right now, and the European Union needs France. So I don't think we're going to see any major shift in France's policy towards Europe other than a possible rapprochement as a result of all the things I've just said.
Thank you. Christine, did you want to come in on this? Because I do also want to get to the questions that our audience has. So maybe the last word on this.
No, just a quick point to stress the fact that Europe has been the main argument of Macron since the previous election. And I don't quite agree with Marta. I think the past 5 years, he has tried, sometimes failed many times, but he has tried. And together with Merkel, what happened with the financial plan of 750 billion that was decided upon last summer is indeed a turning point, which Ukraine now, of course, even accelerates, as Macron's main project is the idea that Europe needs to have its own strategic autonomy. And the fact that Germany is going to spend more on defense shows that indeed it's an evolution which I think is very much fits very well into Macron's ambition for Europe. And I think we'll see if he's re-elected that he will try and push for more European progress on those scores.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I think that is probably true, at least that would be my guess, that this in a way validates his position. Now, let's go to the questions, if that's okay. We have several that have already sort of been typed into the Q&A. I'm gonna start with the first one, Anthony Valion, who asks, who's an ILSE external alum, who says, have the anti-Macron French left and center-left reunited under Mélenchon, and where have the Gilets Jaunes supporters gone? Are they splitting to Le Pen's right or Mélenchon's left or elsewhere? So the Gilets Jaunes is a very interesting question, and the anti-Macron left, where are they? And I think this might be tailor-made for Rainbow, if I could guess, but anyone, please feel free to take this one.
Okay. The anti-Macron left is increasingly uniting under Mélenchon. It's taken them long enough to find a candidate to unite under. And, you know, if they'd managed to do that 3 or 4 months ago, they would have been in a happier position, I think. So the unification under Mélenchon is default. It's not a conviction. I think a number of the people who are rallying to his support don't actually agree with him on a number of fundamental issues. They simply want a left-wing candidate to do well. And as the candidate from the left who was doing best in the polls, he has become what the French call the vote utile, the useful vote, or to put it more accurately, the strategic vote. And so people are increasingly aligning behind him, despite the fact that I agree entirely with Christine's estimation that he took a real hit for his support for Putin. He's managing to get these extra votes in spite of and not because of that. But I don't think this is a fundamental realignment of the French politics in the direction of Mélenchon. I think this is an act of desperation because there's no one else really to align behind. If it's all right, I'd rather defer to Marta for the question about the Gilets Jaunes. I think she has some interesting things to say about that.
I'll take it. So kind of what's happening with the Gilets Jaunes, I've been trying the last few days to kind of find this out and look at what's happening with them. And I don't think there's any recent data, but looking at sort of what happened in 2019, presumably that's what's going to happen. And what happened there is that they split.
In the European elections, or what do you mean by 2019? Yeah, okay.
They split. Marine Le Pen benefited a lot from that vote, as did Mélenchon. I wouldn't be surprised if Zemmour was someone who got a few of their votes. But I think what's interesting about the Gilets Jaunes is that we tend to forget that the Gilets Jaunes brings together a lot of different people with a lot of different grievances. What tends to bring them together is that they have some skepticism about representative politics, but they don't necessarily all share the same type of politics. So that means that's what makes it very difficult for them to then coalesce and create some kind of organized movement. So if you look at how much the actual Gilets Jaunes movement, how many points they got in the election, it's abysmal. It's really, really small. Precisely because there are very different ideas concerning what the movement should be about politically. And I also suspect that a huge amount of them will just not show up, because if you don't think that politics represents you, if you don't think that there's any possibility of an election mattering or making a change, if you just think that you know who's going to win and that anyway, whoever wins is not going to represent you, there's really no reason for you to show up.
And so maybe connected to this question, there's a question, it's by M. Svitlik for Professor Murray, but I think it's for the panel. So how much of the collapse of the right and the left, so to speak, has been due to real changes in French societies, or is it more to do with these leaders, these leadership sort of personalities, and how attractive, likable, good they are at the politics. What would you say? Obviously, this is not a scientific undertaking tonight, but if you sort of could say, hey, it's more to do with this and less to do with that, what would you say? I heard Christine earlier say, well, the French society has sort of moved, right? The axis of contestation has changed. Rainbow, what do you think?
I think the leadership candidates do actually play quite an important part. And I think that's a reflection in part of the presidential nature of French politics. I think other countries are more driven by the political party. The leader still has an impact. But in France, we see that for the presidential elections, there's a lot put on the personality of the candidates. And that's why you see a different balance of strength in the presidential elections to elections at other levels. And you see a few people like Mélenchon, like in previous elections, François Bayrou, who don't necessarily have a huge presence in other elections, but the charisma of the leader and the their ability to mobilize behind them puts them out front. The fact that Macron was able to win a presidential election without a political party behind him is inconceivable in a different type of political system, because the party came afterwards. He won the election and he created a party around him to contest the parliamentary elections. But at the time, it was really just a vehicle for his own presidential campaign. And because of that, you can see a change in fortunes if a charismatic leader disappears or if a new one emerges. I think some of the problems experienced in the Parti Socialiste are more fundamental. I think they need more than just a new charismatic leader to lift them up out of the doldrums. I think they need to do some quite serious soul searching. Whereas I think poor leadership has been a bigger issue for Les Républicains. I think there's still quite a high level of sort of latent support there in the population, but they haven't really managed to unite effectively around a consensus candidate. And I think that internal division has allowed their voters to splinter off towards their different rivals.
Chris, may I come in on this? I think, you know, in our countries and in France, it's very striking. People have become much more individualistic with social media. They really care about what they think and or what people who think like them think. So that's why the debate, which used to be, you know, in a political culture where we put so much importance on language, the political debate has become very poor. And again, I think social media have been changing the very fabric of our systems, and not only in France. There's also a question of leadership, of course. Some generations are, you know, better or more brilliant or more effective than others. That also happens. And it is true that being a politician these days is a very difficult job. And that we see very few people of the younger generations who really want to get into that. They think, you know, what a terrible life. We just get, you know, insulted all the time or hit all the time and, you know, no material reward or whatever. So I think that that is also a phenomenon, but it's true there's a leadership question. And again, it shows in the lack of excitement, which TV debates, for instance, actually provoke, you know, currently, that it's not exciting. Even if Zemmour has shown talent, and Mélenchon, of course, is a very gifted speaker and has been for a long time. But Macron, in those terms, still emerges as a very unique political phenomenon. If he is reelected, he will be the only president to actually be reelected for a second term. All his predecessors were not. Hollande didn't even compete. Sarkozy was defeated. Chirac did two terms, but in another system. Giscard d'Estaing only did one term, and Mitterrand did two, but in another system. Mm-hmm. So if Macron makes it, it will be quite a performance in those terms.
So I think what we're also hearing, and this is going to be a joke, so don't take it too seriously, all the young people who are listening tonight, yeah, I know some of them are French students who are at the LSE, or French students who are thinking about politics as a future, public policy as a future. People, you need to become more interesting. You need to become more entertaining. There is a future for you in French politics. Just get out there. The world's for you taking. Marta, you've had your hands up for a while.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I suppose I'm going to be the controversial voice in this panel, and I'm going to say that one thing that's interesting though about French politics is that we see different dynamics at different political levels. So everything that Rainbow described earlier about sort of the reconfiguration of French politics is true for the presidential election, as is this kind of this personalization of politics, this increased focus on really the leader. But what was really interesting to see in the regional elections was that the former left and right wing parties survived at the local level. So we're in this interesting situation where local politics is all about kind of local implantation of traditional parties that still are there and kind of holding on to power in regions or in municipalities. But that is not reflected at all in national level politics, where you have the debate right now is between Macron, who didn't win a single region. I think En Marche did rather poorly in the end. I know En Marche did really poorly. And where Les Républicains and the Parti Socialiste actually managed to hold on to their strongholds. So it's really, I think what's really interesting here is that we are observing different dynamics depending on what we are looking at. So it's quite difficult to talk about kind of one single thing where we're seeing, you know, personalization of politics. It kind of depends on what you're looking at.
Yeah, but this time around, we talk about the presidential election. You're absolutely right about local people who are really rooted in their territories. And the main problem for Macron after the parliamentary elections will be to actually check whether that new party that he has tried to really launch has enough roots to make it, and that will be a very interesting moment in French politics, in my view. In some ways, more interesting than the presidential election.
So, speaking of elections, if we're already done with this one, let's talk about the parliamentary election. There's a couple of questions from our audience about how this might affect how the outcome of the presidential election might reverberate through to the parliamentary election. That's sort of one question. And sort of related to that is this from William Daniel. Will Macron be able to retain his lead, or do you predict that it could be eroded by some of the smaller parties doing well, I presume, in the parliamentary election? So if you had to bet your hard-earned cash on how the parliamentary election is going to come out, what would you say? So my money is going to be on a En Marche majority, but I don't know that I would bet a lot of money on how big that majority is going to be. But I'm not the expert here. What do you say, Rainbow? What do you think?
France used to have its presidential and parliamentary elections operating in different cycles. It used to be a 7-year presidential term, a 5-year parliamentary term, which meant that you had a number of parliamentary elections taking place off cycle. And one result of that was that you sometimes ended up with a parliament of one political colour and a president of another. And that led to what was called cohabitation, which was effectively stalemate. It was very difficult for anything to get done when you had the president and the prime minister from different political formations. And they changed the electoral calendar to align the presidential and parliamentary elections so that they would each be in a five-year cycle with the with the parliamentary elections coming straight after the presidential. And the consequence of that has been that the parliamentary elections have been largely downgraded to a second order election, because so far in every election that's taken place since this alignment of the electoral calendars, we have seen the parliamentary elections used to give the president a majority. And that is not necessarily always an enthusiastic endorsement of the president as much as it is a desire for effective governance. And I think if Macron wins the election, he will probably get a parliamentary majority on that basis more than any other. I think what will be more interesting will be to see whether the parties that have underperformed in this election can make something of a comeback in the parliamentary elections. I completely agree with what the other panelists have said, that there are more strongholds at local levels than there are sometimes at the national level. So I don't think we will see the total effacement of the Parti Socialiste that we're seeing in terms of their sort of 2% in the polls. But one of the reasons why the French left struggled so much to unify behind a single candidate is because they had their eyes in part on the parliamentary elections. None of them actually thought they could win the presidential election. They weren't really in it to win it. They were in it to establish their electoral strength, to give them more negotiating power for trying to form alliances afterwards in the parliamentary elections, because they try to avoid splitting the vote. So it suits them to try and divide constituencies up ahead of the election and say, well, this will be the candidate of the left in this constituency, so that you don't end up splitting the vote and letting the other parties through by default. And the better you do in the presidential election, the more negotiating room you have at that stage to say, well, we deserve X percent of the constituencies. But we're going to be in a strange situation, unprecedented, where the Green Party is going to do significantly better in the presidential election than the Socialist Party. But I can't see the Socialists turning around and saying, well, why don't you have half of our parliamentary seats then? I think they're going to resist. So the question will be whether they end up sticking to the historical division of seats between the parties, whether there's a renegotiation based on the changing party's fortunes, or whether they simply refuse to cooperate, and what that will mean in terms of the election outcomes. But I think the headline story will be that Macron gets his majority. And I think then the real test will be whether Les Républicains can hold their current status as the main party of opposition.
You raise an interesting question, Rainbow, having to do, of course, with the institutional design of the French Republic at this time. That one of our students, Timothy Poissonneau, is saying, would you actually consider the system to be flawed since the referendum of 2000 because it turns the parliamentary election into what you call a second order election? What true counterpowers to the president are there in the current system? Is there a way to really engineer opposition in the current system, I suppose, is part of the question. Do you consider this to be a risk? I mean, we're talking, Christine brought up the issue of turnout, the sort of issues of legitimacy, issues of boringness, issues of democratic flaws. Is this something we need to worry about?
Sorry, go on, Christine.
No, just a quick word. I think that Parliament has a lot of power. You know, the Constitution has seen to that. And what will be interesting, if indeed Macron gets a majority for his own party, will be what happens within that party, because of course, you know, many people will already be planning what might happen in 5 years from now, because Macron cannot get a third term. That's forbidden by our constitution. And so it would be interesting in particular to watch how his former prime minister, Edouard Philippe, will move within the next parliament. But a short answer, parliament does have power, but Rainbow is absolutely right. That reform that actually Chirac, center-right conservative, actually intended has weakened the system in the sense that the French actually loved cohabitation because they felt, you know, they had something of both worlds, even if indeed it got to a degree of paralysis in actual reforms.
So we're not going to worry about it for the next 5 minutes then, because politics will continue. And you're absolutely right in saying, of course, that the Constitution does provide for a parliament that has significant powers. And it's for the sovereign, that is us, not me personally, but for the French citizens to decide who should occupy those and hold those powers. Rainbow, is this directly to this? Because I was going to make a turn to foreign policy. Let's have your word on this, and then we'll move to external relations.
Just to say that when Macron was elected in the last election, he brought in a bunch of novices with him, which was unprecedented in French politics. Most of the people elected in his party had never held office before. And it was considered that that significantly weakened parliament because they were neophytes, they didn't know what they were doing. And so they were just seen as his lackeys who fell in line and supported him on everything. And we've seen a huge strengthening in the willingness of those deputies to challenge him and to stand up to him over the course of the parliament, that they ceased to be a rubber stamp to all of his proposals and started taking on the behaviour of a functioning parliament. So I think even if he gets a majority, he's not going to have as easy a ride as he has done in the previous term.
Excellent, thank you. So I'm just looking through these questions, and a number of them having to do with foreign policy. And I guess I'm trying to figure out kind of how to take them and which order to take them in. I guess the first one might be from Anthony Valion again, sort of where are the candidates on foreign policy and where are they on foreign policy and the EU? The US just decided a strategic compass, and Macron has spoken about the EU developing strategic autonomy. Are those ideas now more widely shared across the political spectrum? Where do candidates and parties stand on these issues? Christine, you want to take that one? Do you have a sense? Or do we
The Ukrainian war actually vindicates Macron's ambitions on those scores, you know, strategic autonomy, European defense. And he has tried over the past 5 years, and of course, in spite of COVID to a degree, to promote these ideas with our European partners, who are not at all convinced, most of them, if only because the Ukrainian war vindicates their point of view that what really matters is American protection. And so the interesting debate, in my view, will be, again, how to articulate what might be the new European strategic compass with NATO. How can these two schemes work together? How can European defense, with Germany spending much more on defense but buying immediately American fighter planes, how will European defense actually progress? And so I think that will be a very interesting debate in the years to come. And again, Ukraine is indeed not only a shock, but a reality check for most European countries.
One of the interesting things to me about this current dynamic is, of course, that the war has reshuffled the cards in very interesting ways. And you know, sort of the German government has made sort of a historic turnaround, one might say, in how it wishes to approach sort of foreign policy and threats from the East, and its relationship with Russia is being questioned very severely in the German media. There's a very heated debate right now about the foreign policy under Angela Merkel and what she has been up to all these years. Of course, now we have Olaf Scholz, we have a new chancellor. One of the questions that's being asked here in the chat is how will the the French-German relationship evolved? Because you now you have a new chancellor, you no longer have Angela Merkel sitting there, and a younger, newly elected French president in Macron. You will have a world where you have a newly elected head of a German government who's a social democrat and is heading up a three-party coalition with Greens and Liberals, who's new in office, against a now seasoned European politician in Macron. How would that relationship evolve? Do we have any guesses on that?
I mean, I think at the moment, I'm not the expert on foreign policy, but from what I have seen so far, it does seem that there are some tensions actually in that relationship concerning the attitude towards Russia and especially the huge issue of energy supplies, because of course, France and Germany have very different, supposedly quite different positions on how to deal with that. So I think it will also depend on some national calculations that they will be making that might end up being really quite different in terms of where the relationship should be going and how the EU should actually be responding to these issues.
Yeah, if you think about the sources of energy supply in these two countries, they couldn't be more different with the French investment and use of nuclear power. And the Germans having decided to get out of nuclear power altogether, right? And there's now a debate, of course, within German politics around whether that was such a great and smart idea, and instead to rely on Russian gas. And so this will become a very interesting touch point, I think, as we go forward, because they come from very different places when it comes to that. And obviously, energy is extraordinarily essential to the economy, to the economies of both countries. Let's turn back to some more fun, I was saying fun in quotation marks, French politics matters. Rachid Chaudhry is asking, with Macron, Le Pen and Zemmour, I'm reading now, with Macron, Le Pen and Zemmour alienating French Muslims or taking actively anti-Muslim positions, and seemingly only Hidalgo seeking to court Muslim voters. Do you expect Muslims to vote en masse for the socialist candidate or simply sit the election out?
I mean, I would say there's also Les Républicains. They might not be courting them openly, but they're not being quite as extreme, I suppose, as Le Pen or Zemmour. I think the issue once again here is thinking about whether Muslim people vote only in terms of their Muslim identity, or are there other issues that they care about that lead them to vote for one party or another? Say having conservative views on certain issues might lead them to vote for a conservative party. So they might not necessarily respond to the politician who's openly courting their vote, but they might quite simply vote not as Muslims, but as Muslims who, amongst other things, have political views on issues. So I suppose I don't really know how that vote will go, but it's a complex vote, like most votes.
I think a lot of Muslims are not going to have forgotten the Islamophobia coming out of Les Républicains and other candidates. excuse me, there's not been a lot of love between the Muslim community and the Républicain Party over the last couple of decades. But the size of the Muslim community in France vastly exceeds the current scores that Hidalgo is getting in the polls. So there certainly hasn't been any evidence as yet of a flocking en masse of the Muslim vote to Hidalgo. But I think it's true to say that, you know, as Marta says, there isn't a unified voting bloc. And I think if there were, maybe candidates would make more of an effort to try and win that vote. Whereas historically, Muslim voters have been disregarded, if not vilified, by the different candidates. And I think, unfortunately, there isn't really an ideal place for them to go electorally in terms of a sort of an ethnic or community vote. So I think they are largely going to base their voting choice on other things within the parameters that they have.
Thanks, Rainbow. So let's get back to the war. Let's get back to the thing that we all, if you're anything like me, are paying lots of attention to and spending way too much time thinking about and watching the news about and reading the news about. I mean, generally speaking, when you ask political scientists, they will say crises are a good thing for incumbents, right? When a pandemic hits, there's a rally around the flag, support goes up for mainstream politicians, support goes up for those who hold the reins of power, who can, you know, push the levers of government to keep us healthy, protect us, and so on and so forth. So Mr. Macron has had a pandemic. Now we've got a war. Can this only be helpful to him? I sort of heard a little bit about, well, it's helpful right now, maybe, at least in the remarks. I'm paraphrasing what you said earlier, but the chickens might come home to roost at some point. The war will have reverberations that aren't going to be all positive for him. How do you think the war will play out in the short run into the parliamentary election, into the second round of the parliamentary election, and then for the rest of the year?
I believe there is a rally behind the flag or around the flag, which is very very obvious, I think. And it's only Zemmour's supporters who openly yell at Macron playing that role. Traditional conservatives do not, and quite on the contrary, they stress the fact that they cannot criticize the head of state in such circumstances. But I do believe, as I pointed out earlier, that the economic consequences are really difficult to tackle. And that is probably for Macron in the coming 2 weeks, what he has to try and convince people that he is actually able to act on the cost of living, on reducing the expenses from bread to gas at the petrol station and so on and so forth. In that sense, the war has a difficult impact on this election for him. But I think the idea that there needs to be someone at the head of our pyramid who knows the situation, who can talk to Putin, who actually acts in close coordination with the German chancellor in this respect, I think that works, that plays in favor of Macron.
So is it then an election about competence, ultimately?
Well, it should be. Like any election, shouldn't it?
Good point. Rainbow.
You're muted.
Yes, sorry, I hit my microphone about 10 times and it didn't unmute, but it's done it now. Macron has been in a strange situation in that he was about to declare his candidacy at the point where the war broke out, and he then had to delay the launch of his campaign. And because he was the sitting president, that forced everyone else to delay the launch of their campaign as well. And since then, it's been a very subdued campaign. In fact, the whole campaign for everybody has taken a back seat to the war. It's grabbed all the headlines, as you noticed. The campaign itself is very much secondary. And normally at this stage, the president would be first and foremost a candidate, but the situation requires that he continue to be very actively the president at the expense of his election campaign. He hasn't really been able to invest in it the way he would have done. But at the same time, he's looking very presidential, and he's a major player in the current international crisis. He's having regular discussions with Putin. He's one of the leading figures in the EU. But at the same time, he's not having a huge amount of success. He's had a lot of phone calls with Putin, none of which has resulted in any tangible outcome that he can go home and say, well, hooray, you know, I saved the day. And so in the longer term, people might start to ask, well, what has he actually achieved for all of this? But at the moment, he's looking presidential and the other candidates are struggling to compete with that because the most they can do is make noise in the background. They can't really stand up to that. But it is going to affect him, I think, the longer it drags on, once the novelty has worn off and people are just getting sort of despondent about the situation and suffering the repercussions at that point, they might say to him, well, why haven't you done more to fix it or to protect France from the fallout?
The counter argument would be what, though? Who's best positioned to say, I have a solution? From the descriptions that you've given, I don't see the obvious sort of counterpoint there, because these are people who have been taking money from the enemy, right? Or the enemy's bank, I apologize. Marta, you had your hand up.
Yeah, no, I just, I suppose I was going to disagree with Christine, because I think it's true that this election is about competence, and this seems to be something that is really key in Macron's, right? Because again, he's known quantity, we're seeing him being presidential, doing things. But the problem is that elections are not only about competence, they're also about ideas. And at this stage, because Macron has been so presidential, as Rainbow just said, he hasn't been able to actually campaign on his ideas and what he would do besides being competent. So the question then will become at some point, okay, sure, he's competent, but competent to do what? And it's probably the kind of questions that it's better if he addresses before an election rather than after it. So I think that the risk is that by putting too much focus on the competence of the presidents, that we're forgetting that presidents are elected, not just to be there and do stuff, but to do things that they were elected on. And we don't really know at this stage much of Macron's program.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to disagree with Marta.
I'll let her be referee. Go on.
It has been a surprise that Macron would actually put forward two proposals which immediately irked the trade unions, the left, the other candidates about retirement age and other reforms which are bound to be very unpopular. So you are right in the sense that the war has taken over most people's attention. But Macron has tried, I mean, he has put forward his program, which I guess he will develop in the coming 2 weeks, with these two proposals, which came as a shock. You know, why does he need now to talk about retirement, which the French would love? The other candidates say, oh, you know, retirement should be at 60. And Macron says, oh no, it should be at 65, when look at what's happening in the UK or in the rest of Europe. So I think you're right in the sense that he's been hampered not campaigning in the traditional sense of the word, but I guess he will have to actually promote a kind of program in the coming 2 weeks.
I'm going to give the last word to Rainbow before we come to a close, because I think we're almost at the witching hour.
Thank you. I was actually going to talk about pension reform just as Christine came in. I think we both had the same response, that this has been the main policy that Macron has put forward for the next 5 years. And it's been something that every president has tried to deal with. And it's been the unsquareable circle, because the pension age needs to go up. France is an outlier compared to the rest of Europe. They're very attached to retirement at 60. It's not financially viable with the current life expectancy. And I think, unlike all of his predecessors, Macron might actually be in a position to do it now, because he's going to be a sitting president on a second term who can't be re-elected and doesn't necessarily have a political movement that can outlive him either. And so, unlike all of his predecessors, he doesn't really have anything to lose. So maybe his long-term legacy might be that he was the president that finally cracked pension reform And I think if he does manage to achieve that, that would be quite a significant outcome of his second term.
Oh, it's a really interesting note to close on. How a lame duck presidency might actually change something profound in French social policy. Thank you very much, everyone. It's been a great pleasure to have the opportunity for me, and I'm sure for all of our listeners, to listen to you and to the debate. Thanks for the excellent discussion. I learned a lot tonight. So that was really, really great. And thanks to everyone out there for listening.